Hey everyone, welcome back. We're diving deep today, going into Dr. Tiberius Rada's teaching on Ezra and Nehemiah.
Oh yeah, these are fascinating books.
Specifically, we'll be looking at chapters 9 and 10.
Right, where he really gets into God's nature and how the Israelites will try to recommit to following him.
It feels like something we can all relate to, you know?
Yeah.
Those promises we make, the best intentions, and then life just happens.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's a constant struggle.
So where does Dr. Rada begin with all this?
He jumps right into that incredible prayer in Nehemiah chapter 9.
Yeah.
The Israelites are basically laying out a theological lesson. Okay. It's like, who is God and what's he done for us?
Right.
A grand summary of their entire relationship with God.
So like theological cliff notes. Mm-hmm. What are some of the key points they hit on about God?
Well, they start by acknowledging God's eternal nature.
Yeah.
This idea that he exists outside of time. Forever in the past, forever the future. It's a concept, you know, that you see throughout the Bible, Genesis, Revelation, all over.
Right, right.
But for the Israelites, it must have been really mind-blowing.
Yeah, bet.
Surrounded by all those cultures, worshiping gods tied to, like, specific places or elements or whatever.
So right away, they're separating their God from all those other so-called gods.
Exactly. They're basically saying he's not just a god, he's the God, Yahweh.
Yahweh.
The creator of everything. Heaven, earth, the whole shebang.
The whole enchilada.
Exactly. And it's like they're pointing back to that foundation story in Genesis, reminding everyone where it all began.
Right.
And it's not just that he created it all, he continues to sustain it all.
Right. It's that active involvement, not some distant, hands-off creator.
Totally. And then they get into this idea, and this is where it gets fascinating, that this powerful, eternal God chose them.
Oh, wow.
He specifically picked Abraham and made a covenant with him.
A covenant.
That's the concept of election.
Mm.
God's choice isn't based on, you know, what we do, but on his own will.
Even today, I think that's a tough one to wrap our heads around. We want to earn God's favor, right? But they're saying, nope, he chose us just because he chose us.
Precisely. And I think there's this real humility in that, recognizing they didn't deserve it.
Right, right.
But woven into that is the affirmation that he's a promise keeper. He stuck to that covenant with Abraham, even when Abraham's descendants, well, didn't always hold up their end of the bargain.
Which brings us to the Exodus, that classic story. And I think Dr. Rada uses this as like the prime example of God's faithfulness in action.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we often get caught up in the spectacle, the plagues, the parting of the Red Sea, which, don't get me wrong, are amazing.
Oh, yeah.
But Dr. Rada points out something more subtle here. The Israelites remember how God saw their suffering in Egypt.
Hmm.
How he heard their cries. And that's a direct contrast to those idols everybody else was worshiping, those deaf, mute statues that couldn't care less about human suffering.
It's the difference between a God who's involved and one who's just, well, not.
Exactly. And then, yes, we do get those big dramatic displays of power.
Right.
Plagues on Egypt, each one a challenge to Pharaoh and all those Egyptian gods.
Right.
God's making a name for himself, showing his authority, proving he's the one true God.
I mean, that parting of the Red Sea, just wow.
Incredible, right.
It's hard to even imagine seeing something like that. Talk about a powerful visual.
Absolutely. But more than just a visual, it was a lifeline. God saves them from certain death. Destroys their pursuers,
wow.
Then leads them through the wilderness, provides for them pillar of cloud by day, fire by night. You'd think after all that, they'd be like the most grateful, obedient people ever.
Yeah, you would think. So be about that.
Well, that's where things get a little complicated.
I was about to say.
Dr. Rada points out that this prayer, this beautiful summary of God's faithfulness, actually reveals how the Israelites tended to, let's say, forget their history a bit.
So even with this track record of God coming through, they still messed up.
Oh, yeah. And that's what we'll dig into next.
So we've got this picture of God eternal, all-powerful, the one who keeps his promises. He rescues the Israelites in this incredible way, but then their actions don't exactly scream gratitude.
Huh.
What were some of the things they did that just made you shake your head?
Well, one of the most shocking examples comes right after that miraculous provision in the wilderness, manna falling from heaven, water from a rock. They decide to build a golden calf.
Seriously?
Yeah.
After all of that, I mean, it's almost comical how quickly they seem to forget.
It really is. And they weren't just messing around. They were straight up mimicking the idols of Egypt, the very culture they had just been liberated from. To put it in modern terms, it'd be like signing a contract and then instantly breaking it.
Or saying, I do at the altar, and then running off with someone else at the reception. It really shows how deep this betrayal went. It wasn't just a mistake. It was a deliberate turning away from everything they'd just experienced.
Right. And that's what Dr. Rada calls blasphemy, this blatant disrespect for God, especially after he'd been so good to them. But the story doesn't end there. They eventually do make it to the Promised Land, right?
They do. And they even experience times of peace and prosperity. But then, well, it's like they just can't help themselves. What happens next?
It's like a broken record, sadly. They fall back into the same patterns. Rebelling against God, ignoring his prophets, basically repeating all the mistakes of their ancestors.
This reminds me of something Dr. Rada talked about in her previous session, that cycle of apostasy we see in the book of Judges. The Israelites sin, they face the consequences, they cry out to God, he sends a judge to deliver them, things are good for a while, and then, boom, they're right back at it.
Exactly. It's like they're stuck on this endless loop of disobedience. And honestly, reading it, you almost want to yell at them, don't you learn anything? But that's where I think we have to pause and remember, this isn't just an ancient story. It's a reflection of human nature. Haven't we all been there? We make promises to ourselves. We have good intentions. And then, well, we fall short.
That's so true. It's like that New Year's resolution we make every year, full of motivation. And then by February, it's out the window. We're all prone to wander, aren't we? What I find amazing is that even with all of this back and forth, all of this blatant disobedience, God doesn't give up on them.
That's the beautiful thing about God's character. He's constantly offering second chances. Even when he punishes the Israelites, it's always with the goal of restoring them, of bringing them back to himself. Ultimately, he even brings them back from exile. Talk about incredible patience.
So we've got this tension, this constant push and pull between God's faithfulness and the Israelites' struggles. But that leads us to Nehemiah chapter 10, where they decide to make a new covenant with God. It's almost like they reach a breaking point and realize something has to change.
It's like they're saying, okay, we get it now. We need to make a serious commitment. And this isn't just a casual agreement. They actually sign and seal a document, a physical representation of their promise. It's like the ancient version of signing a contract.
Signing a contract seems pretty serious. Do we have any insights into how the everyday Israelites felt about this commitment? Were they all on board, or was there some hesitancy?
That's a great question, and honestly, it's hard to say for certain. The text doesn't really delve into individual feelings, but we know that a significant number of leaders and people signed this document, and there's a sense of urgency in their actions, like they knew things had to change. Now, what makes this new covenant really interesting are the specific things they vow to do. One of the biggest is no more intermarriage with people from other nations.
Right. That seems to be a recurring theme throughout their history. Every time they start intermarrying, things go south pretty quickly.
It was a constant problem for them. They'd marry into these other cultures and start adopting their religious practices, which, let's be honest, often involves some pretty wild stuff that directly conflicted with their commitment to Yahweh. It's like they were trying to mix oil and water. It just didn't work.
So this ban on intermarriage, it wasn't about being exclusive or judgmental. It was about protecting their faith, maintaining their unique identity as God's people.
Exactly. They were trying to learn from their past mistakes, recognizing that blending their faith with these other belief systems always led them away from God. Another key element of this new covenant was honoring the Sabbath.
Now, we all love a good day of rest, but this was about more than just taking a break, right?
So much more. It was about recognizing God's authority, acknowledging him as the creator who rested on the seventh day. It was a way of aligning their rhythm of life with God's rhythm, a visible reminder of their dependence on him.
And it's not just about avoiding work on the Sabbath. They also commit to not doing any buying or selling. That must have been a tough one, especially for those whose livelihoods depended on daily trade.
Absolutely. It's easy to say, I'll honor the Sabbath, but when your income is on the line, it becomes a much more difficult choice. This shows a willingness to prioritize their relationship with God, even if it meant potential financial loss.
I'm starting to see how this renewed covenant wasn't just a list of rules. It was a blueprint for a transformed life.
Yeah.
They were trying to weave their faith into every aspect of their existence, from their relationships to their work to their finances.
Right. And speaking of finances, they also made a commitment to support the temple and its services. They pledged to give a third of a shekel every year, offer their first fruits, and reinstate the tithe.
Wait, wasn't it supposed to be a half shekel? I remember Dr. Rada mentioning something about a possible discrepancy in the currency system.
You've got a good memory. He suggested that the shift from half a shekel, which was required in the Law of Moses, to a third of a shekel might have been due to differences between the Persian currency, which they were using at the time, and the old Israelite system. It's fascinating how even seemingly small details like this can open up a window into the historical context.
It's a reminder that we can't just read these texts at face value. We have to consider the cultural and historical nuances. But regardless of the exact amount, the point is that they were making a conscious effort to support God's work, to invest in the things that mattered most.
And it wasn't just about throwing money at the temple. They also pledged to be actively involved in its upkeep and maintenance. They recognized that their commitment went beyond financial giving. It was about being present, rolling up their sleeves, and ensuring that God's house wasn't neglected.
This makes me think about our own approach to faith, you know? It's easy to get caught up in the routine, the rituals, maybe even the financial giving. But are we truly invested? Are we showing up in tangible ways, not just with our wallet, but with our time and energy?
That's a great question to ponder. And I think the Israelite story highlights how easy it is to slip into complacency, to lose sight of the bigger picture.
Yeah, it's so easy to just go through the motions and kind of lose sight of why we're doing any of this.
It is. But I think the Israelite story, what we've been unpacking from Dr. Rada's teaching, it gives us a framework. You know, it reminds us that change, real change, it has to start on the inside.
So not just about checking boxes and following rules.
Right. Think about their renewed covenant. No intermarriage, honoring the Sabbath, supporting the temple. Those weren't like abstract ideas. Okay. Those were concrete actions, real tangible ways to show their commitment.
So it's not about these big sweeping gestures. It's the small things we do every day that add up.
Exactly. Finding those practical ways to live out our faith, you know, making it part of our daily routine.
Like what? Give me some examples.
Well, it could be something as simple as setting aside time for prayer or actually opening our Bibles, maybe volunteering in our community, or just treating people, everyone we encounter, with kindness and respect. It's those little choices, those daily interactions that reveal what we really believe.
Our actions speak louder than words.
Right. Exactly. And of course, it's not always easy. I mean, the Israelites struggled with consistency, too. We all do. But that's where grace comes in.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to mess up. We're going to fall short. But it's about getting back up, turning back to God, admitting we need him. And you know what? He's always there waiting. He doesn't expect perfection. He just wants our hearts.
That's good. It's encouraging.
Yeah. And as we finish up this deep dive into Ezra and Nehemiah, I think that's what I want us all to remember. It doesn't matter how many times we've messed up. God's always ready to welcome us back. He's ready to help us get back on track.
It's never too late to start over, to try again.
That's the beauty of God's grace, isn't it?
Absolutely. So as you go about your week, think about what we've talked about today. How can we all align our actions with what we say we believe?
Yeah. What are those small practical changes we can make? Those things that will help us grow, help us become more like the people God created us to be.
It's a journey.
A lifelong adventure, really. And I think it's just getting started.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Ezra and Nehemiah. We'll see you next time. Keep exploring, keep learning, and keep seeking that connection with God.